You're listening to Help and Hope, an audio ministry of CCEF. Our mission is to restore Christ to counseling and counseling to the church. On the program today, Dr. David Powlison sits down to discuss Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's five stages of grief. David is a counselor and faculty member at CCEF and an adjunct professor at Westminster Theological Seminary. Listen now as David discusses how we should think about grief from a biblical perspective.
Elizabeth Kubler-Ross deserves a great deal of credit for opening the discussion. I think, to speak from the standpoint of the church has always known that in the promises of God, I believe in the resurrection from the dead and the life everlasting, we have the answer, the fundamental answer to the problem of death and dying and loss and grief and destruction. We have hope, and thus it is one of the central implications of our faith that we do not grieve like those who have no hope. The 1 Thessalonians 5:14. Obviously not saying we don't grieve. I think there are actually ways where, as a Christian, we actually grieve more and grieve more cleanly because we have hope. And a lot of the things that Kubler-Ross, in opening the discussion about what is it like for people to grieve, she's actually most often capturing very messy, mixed up, complicated grief, because most of the people she worked with were people who grieved without hope. But that doesn't mean that our approach to grief is you don't grieve. I'll argue that it is a simpler, cleaner, more straightforward pain, not mixed with lots of other things. The famous five stages that Kubler-Ross talks about, the first stage being denial, where a person goes numb, they don't want to face it. Second stage, anger, frustrated at what happened, this shouldn't have happened, I'm a victim, this is not fair to me, blaming God, blaming doctors, even blaming the person that got up and died on me. Her third stage, bargaining, the if-onlys, the what-ifs, the foxhole type things, I'll be a better person if I'm healed, those sorts of things. The fourth stage, depression, where one is just left in a fog of sadness and even despair. And then the final stage, acceptance, where there's some sort of resolution. Those are clearly five things that do happen. They're data bits, if you will. But as we as Christians think about the issue of the stages of grief, we have two major, well, we'll see how many major problems we have with it. One major problem we have with it is that there are far more things left out than put in terms of typical reactions people can have for grief. For example, it does not include the person who, in facing a shocking loss, actually, say a cancer diagnosis, feels an intense and immediate grief about those who will be left and most hurt and impacted by that loss. That's a reaction that people do. It doesn't capture the way in which certain people in suffering actually come to a kind of peace, that maybe their first reaction is a kind of a peace and relief that a struggle will be over. That's something much more profound than, quote, acceptance, which is a rather shallow kind of way of capturing it. There's a lot of different reactions, and one of the things that is most striking is how actual grief is not one of the five stages. The closest that Kubler-Ross comes to grief, sorrow, pain, just the anguish of loss, immediately gets called depression. And depression is a much more complicated, befogged, going through the motions. It's not just the raw heartache. And that is one of those things that is a great irony within the within her entire model. Second, so lots left out, including some of the most important things. Second thing that is so noticeable is that they aren't stages. Now, Kubler-Ross herself and her heirs, when they're honest, they recognize they aren't stages. That stages are like bases in baseball. You don't go from home base to second base to third base to first base to, you know, you go, or there's an order, a state, you know. We were on the, you know, on the stage of our trip from Rome to Tokyo means that there, or when we ask the question, you know, what stage are we in the decision-making process, you're assuming some kind of time-related one thing leads to another. And she clearly recognizes that not everybody goes through this, these, quote, stages. On the other hand, the word stage persists, and the word stage runs through the way the material is presented. There is clearly presented this sense that these are stages. And I think actually the reason for that is if all she were saying was, oh, by the way, here's five things people sometimes do, but there's 10 other things they might do. You don't have a theory. You just have someone who has yanked out a few data bits out of reality. And it might be helpful to hear about those five and maybe never thought about three of them. But it has no life. It has no shelf life as a theory. It's actually the idea that they are stages that makes it endure and makes it compelling. And so I think the model has done a great deal of harm by the fact that it continues to use the language of stages and not thinking through, is there a different and better way? The word stage is linear, successive, logical. And though Kubler-Ross sees that these stages aren't really stages, that there's not really a script, that these are simply descriptions of possible emotions. You know, they're just a couple things out of the grab bag. The theory is its most precious and defining term is actually the stage idea. Because as you say, it gives you hope. It can also become an occasion where people use as a check of how far along the process are they. So, and then the final thing that is missing, that is hugely significant from a Christian standpoint, is that each of the, quote, five stages that she describes is more characteristic of the messy, complicated grief that arises when one actually does not have hope. So you think, for example, let's say, I'll pick a minor example. Let's say I just, a friendship that I'd really valued goes on the rocks. And I feel that sense of loss and dismay. You know, that would be the grief that one would feel because someone betrayed you or someone, you know, that you thought you could trust. And you're now in a grieving process of, it's not the most serious, it's not like facing your own demise, but it's a loss. And the five stages of grief would often be inserted there. Why would I deny that that had happened? Why would I not face it? Why would I not feel the pain of it? And it would be, you know, there might be a variety of reasons, but it would be because of ways in which I have attached my heart to false hopes. So if I need to be liked, if I need to have that relationship, if that it's just defining for my identity, then if it's betrayed, you can see why I would run fast, because my life would be threatened by that. You think of other things, you know, the death of a child or of a spouse. Why would someone go into, quote, into denial? I need the identity of being a mother. I need the identity of being a husband. Without that, my life is ruined. So denial as a, quote, stage makes perfect sense where my heart has placed the eggs in a basket that can be destroyed. And that's part of what goes on in Christian grief, is that we put our eggs in the basket of what can never be destroyed, which actually frees us to then simply face honestly what happens to us. And if something terrible happens, you can look it in the eye and you can ache or feel, you know, if you're a mother of a child who dies, you will feel like somebody cut you in two with a rusty saw. It it hurts like crazy. You have no reason to deny that that has happened, mm-hmm. because you know what kind of a world this is, and you know where your fundamental hope lies. And so, rather than denial and not facing the pain, you face it and feel the pain. What about the anger? Anger implies a kind of entitled sense that what I live for, I need to have. And thus I'm mad at God. I'm mad at the doctors. I'm looking at someone to sue. Mm-hmm. How did my child dare get cancer and up and die, and the doctors are idiots because, you know. Well, that comes, again, that anger, quote, stage arises by the complicating of the grief process created by having false hopes. And so the very phenomenon reveals something about my heart that a Christian analysis helps you to see. How about bargaining? Bargaining is frankly self-centered. I mean, it's the most overtly easiest to see that I am essentially trying to manipulate the powers that be to get what I want, you know? And, you know, if, you know, whatever God there is, if you let my child live, I'll be such a good person, I'll give money to the local charity, I'll never yell at my child anymore. That kind of superstitious, moralistic, demanding is just coming straight out of a heart that does not have its hope set in the right place. Depression. Why depression? And not just heart-wrenching sorrow. Hmm. Depression reflects the despair that of realizing that what I most live for and cherish, I'm never going to get back. You know, that friendship is irrevocably broken. My cancer is going to mean that I don't get to go down into my golden years having all the trips and travel I'd hoped. And so a person lapses into depression and a fog rather than a head-on, honest, appropriate grief that fits the occasion at hand. And then acceptance. Probably acceptance is the best. But even there's something richer than the idea of acceptance, in that that in Christian hope, you don't simply now accept, come to terms with the loss, and get on with life. There's actually, in the ways that the scripture describes how suffering affects us, it purifies our faith, it makes us long more intensely, it actually helps shake us from our sins. I actually use this as the opening case study in class discussion. And I picked this topic because it's so entrenched. It is everywhere. It's taught in elementary schools. It's dominant in social work and nursing and medicine and hospice. And, you know, if you were ever watched any TV around the time of 9/11, at least once in every hour they had a grief counselor come on, and it was the standard shtick that was out there in the grief counseling, and it's such a prevalent approach to grief in our culture, and it's so fundamentally shallow and fundamentally flawed, you know, in its notion of stages and in its inability to actually make sense of why there are complicated, distorted, troublesome grief reactions, and why are there grief reactions that are more simply grieving and trying to make some sense out of why that is.
This concludes today's edition of Help and Hope. If you would like more information about CCEF, you can visit ccef.org. If you're interested in reading more from David Powlison, please look at Speaking Truth in Love or Seeing with New Eyes. You can also get information about our other books and publications at New Growth Press. We look forward to you joining us again on Help and Hope.